So here I am now in New York. The car's broken down right in the middle of Manhattan. And I'm a 21-year English guy from a little English town surrounded by all the hustle and bustle of New York City and the huge buildings, and everything looks so big. And eventually I'm rescued by one of the guys who came looking for me. We were all taken to the apartment that they'd rented for us. Now, what I can't remember is that the apartment was on 52nd Street or 42nd Street, and the studio that we worked in was in 42nd or 52nd Street, but either way, they were 10 blocks apart. The apartment that we had a couple of bedrooms and a little lounge and a kitchen and bathroom. And we soon found out what life in a New York apartment was like in those days. There were no external windows, just a window out into the air shaft that many of the apartments shared. I was shocked on my first night to get up in the night for a drink of water to find that the kitchen light revealed millions of cockroaches on the worktops that disappeared in half a second as the light was turned off. I'd heard about roaches in New York, but I never believed they were quite like this. I think we started working in the studio the following day, and we worked every day recording albums and whatever. And the guys there were very good, and we were excited to find that they had a four-track recording decks, which is quite unusual because up until then we'd only seen two-track recording decks. When you think that nowadays, before digital, or until digital came in, you had 32 and 42-track recording studios. Four was quite pathetic, really, I suppose. So they had to mix down between every set of recordings. Our recordings went quite well. All the tunes were written by Wayne and Tony, who became quite famous songwriters later in England. But strangely enough, because I was a saxophone player who'd started music as a violinist properly, I could read music. And one day, one of the guys came into the studio and said, "Trevor, you can read music, can't you?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "Look, we've got a session downstairs for you. It's $80, I think it was. Can you do it?" I said, "Okay, as long as it's not really too difficult." So I went to the studio downstairs, and I've got to be careful what I say and not be racist, but I was the only white man in the room. I think there's a 14-piece band and a singer. The singer was called Tony Middleton, and you can still find at least one or two tracks of him on YouTube. The band had the regular 4-5-piece rhythm section, 4 horns, trumpet, trombone, baritone sax, and me. So I nervously, a 21-year-old English guy, sat down with these guys who were so friendly to me. I sat next to the baritone player, and we had a little chat, and, you know, "You're from England and all this business." And I said to him, "Who do you play with?" He said, "Oh, Lionel Hampton, man." Now, those of you who don't know who Lionel Hampton was, check him out on YouTube and wherever. He was famous for being the vibraharp or vibraphone player with Benny Goodman's small groups. Anyway, the band was playing some really simple-ish, simple, effective scores to accompany the singer Tony Middleton, sort of rhythm and blues and rock and roll tracks. Very simple, very effective music, and it was so good. I just couldn't believe it. And I was sitting here from my home in Stoke-on-Trent, and here I was in New York City playing with these guys. So I said to the baritone player, because the drummer was so good, I said, "Who's the drummer?" He says, "Why, man?" He says, "That's Bernard Purdy." Well, you look up Bernard Pretty Purdy on the internet as well. He's still giving drum lessons there, and he was the father of funk drumming, I think. He played with King Curtis's band before King Curtis was stabbed to death some years later. And after a while, the guy, the tenor player who I was subbing for, arrived. So that was the end of my session. I'd done half the album with them by then. Anyway, the guy who came in was King Curtis himself. He was doing the session with his mates. And, well, I suppose I was glad to get out of there because it was so daunting, really. But I made my $80, and after that I got one or two more sessions in the studios, which was quite good because we weren't making money recording. We were recording and living, that's all. The other amazing thing that we found, or at least I found about the where we were working was the eating places in the street below. Below us, there was an amazing steakhouse that only sold T-bone steaks. Well, you will have to believe that I'd never seen a steak until then, because England in the 40s and 50s was a pretty poor place where I lived, and steaks were unheard of. And here I see T-bone steaks with great big Idaho potatoes, cold milk to drink, apple pie and cream for afters or for dessert. And that would come to about $1.06 or something like that. That was absolutely crazy. But the days went on with our recording, and there was lots of little episodes of events happening. And I will recall some of those to you in the next recording that I make. Fun with girls, fun with nightclubs, and fun with the people in the street, with some great adventures. Anyway, until the next time, this is Trev saying bye.